Third hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase on this Monday afternoon. ESPN 102.5, The Game. Let's talk with TD, Teron Davenport, NFL Nation reporter, ESPN, ESPN.com, covering the Tennessee Titans. He is on the line with us. Teron, how was your weekend?
Hey, what's going on?
Thumbs up or thumbs down?
Always thumbs up, man.
I was going to say.
Always thumbs up.
I knew the answer. It was an ask and answer. I knew the answer. What did you make of, I know you're a big basketball fan. We've talked to you about The Last Dance. Now that it's over, what was your overall grade?
Hey, listen, I give it A+. I know that the whole delivery pizza thing was kind of a stretch, but everything in there, it was a dope documentary, and it was something every Sunday. We do a Zoom to connect with family back in the Philadelphia area, and I always make sure that we cut that thing before that Last Stand comes on, because otherwise I'm upstairs, I'm gone, I'm off the call. So, yeah, man, it was a great series.
Let's start with this on the Titans front. Somebody that I don't want you to say, if I say who needs to have a big year and name some of the, Derrick Henry, those type of answers. I want to know from the lesser guys, because I guess I'll go on and start. Like, I think this is a big year for Nate Davis. Like, I think he needs to show that, he didn't get off to a good start, slow to finally ease into the lineup, and now he may have at some point a rookie next to him. It's time for him to take that big next step. I guess the way I should phrase it is, who in your mind needs to take that next big step forward? How would you answer that?
For me, it starts with two players. One is the obvious, Adoree Jackson. But, I mean, if you're going on the parameters that you set, I would say Jeffrey Simmons. And what it comes down to is Jeffrey Simmons has to kind of fill that Jarrell Casey role. And that's what they've talked about. But the thing is with that is he's going to have to fill it even more than Jarrell Casey, because they don't have someone to be the Jeffrey Simmons, you know what I mean, of last year. So they really have to figure out a way to get this guy going. I think it's to their advantage that he's there in the building during the week, because of the conditions that allow guys who are in the quote-unquote rehab process, he's able to go in there. And he has to have a huge role for them. He's someone that has to step up.
I want to ask you about Jonnu Smith. I think it's unfair to think that he's going to step in there and be Delanie Walker. That's unfair, because Delanie Walker had a 94 catch season. I mean, Delanie in his heyday here was 60 plus receptions. I think he had a 70 catch season, and then one where he flirted with 100. That's probably unfair. But what is the right number now that he's going to be the go-to guy at the tight end position? What's a good number for Jonnu this season, in your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, I think 60 catches is a good number. And
you think he can get to 60?
I think he could get to 60, but the thing you have to remember, he's not going to, be a dominant force just because of this offense. It's not dictated to allow anybody to be more than one guy to be a dominant force. And we know that force in the passing game is A.J. Brown, but he could do a lot with the catches that he's able to make because of his yards after catch ability. And I think, a 50 to 60 receiving season with between 600 to 700 yards and five touchdowns is definitely reasonable, and it's within expectation.
So now that we're getting NASCAR back and UFC's been putting on events, and I feel like we're getting closer to even more news. Golf put on a little bit of an event this weekend. The preseason schedule, the dates and times were released at the end of last week. We know the NFL schedule is out. Where do you think we are as we sit here now on, what is today, May 18th? Where do you think we are to, I mean, we're coming up on, creeping up on close to 2 months out from training camp beginning. Where do you think this is all headed? Do you think that it's going to be delayed? Do you think it's going to start on time? What's your gut feeling sitting here today?
I think it's going to be delayed just because of the – if you're going to err on the cautious side. So I think it is going to be delayed, but, I mean, I think we're making steps towards becoming more normalized as far as being able to have that interaction and have the facilities open. But I think it's going to be delayed. I don't think the opening of the season will be delayed, but I definitely think the training camp will be.
Talking to Teron Davenport, and, of course, Talking with TD is his podcast, and, of course, he covers the Titans for ESPN. Teron, I know you had a recent episode of Talking with TD, and you did some homework, some background on Isaiah Wilson. You talked to a couple of people that know him well. What did you find out about him?
Well, one of the things I found out about him is he's really smart, and I thought it was interesting in talking to Coach Pittman when he discussed how quickly Isaiah Wilson was able to pick up the concepts of that zone scheme. But the big thing from that interview was he was smart and mature enough, and he had that self-actualization enough to know, okay, you know what? I'm not ready. So I'm going to take that step back and get ready, but I don't want to hurt the team by being out there and not being ready. So I thought that was really good insight that Coach Pittman gave. And he said this in regards to, you know, when they went to Isaiah Wilson and told him he was going to be a red shirt. And that was one of the things that Coach Pittman really liked. So I feel good about that, hearing that. And, you know, that tells me that going into this season, if he feels he's not ready, he's going to be open with it, and he's not going to be one of those guys to force his way out there and hurt the team. So that was the biggest thing I pulled away.
What do you think we're going to see in the coming weeks if facilities open up and you can at least get somebody in for a physical, especially in regards to Jadeveon Clowney? What's the timeline we're looking at if the Titans wanted to bring him in and do a physical? When could that happen here in theory?
Man, I have absolutely no clue. I would say now, and it's funny you mentioned that because I was driving out here and I saw an airplane go by me, and I said, wow, you know, it would be pretty cool if Jadeveon Clowney was on one of those planes. You know, I know the Titans fans would be excited about that, but I have no clue, man. That whole thing is just such a mystery. So I would imagine that right now he would be able to, you know, go in and get seen by a doctor.
I would think that we would know that, though. Wouldn't that be reported? I would want people to know if I'm in the league PR, for example, that we're to the point now where if you do this the right way, you could have somebody in for a physical. It's a key piece of info that it seems like everybody is feeling like that's holding back the process with some of these guys.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. But one of the things that you have to think about is not all doctors do that physical right there in the facility, right? You could have a doctor, a local doctor, you know, that's affiliated with you, and he could go to his office and get it done. So I think there are workarounds if a team really wants to get that done.
Last one for me, Teron. John Glennon from The Athletic wrote something on Logan Ryan. I know you know him very well. The theory in his numbers basically were that the eye-popping numbers of interceptions, tackles for loss, the things that we see firsthand were there. But the underlying numbers from Pro Football Focus were not as impressive, and therefore you look at his age and you're thinking maybe he's not worth what he once was. Do you buy that theory that might be at the crux as to why things unfolded like they did with him?
Well, let me ask you a question. What was one of these numbers from Pro Football Focus? Was it completions allowed?
It was, and it did point out that he was on the field and he was challenged a lot. So there was more passes thrown his way, therefore there's more yards. So I would like to see more on that, but yes.
Okay, well, look, I'm going to take it a step further beyond that. And Chase is on here, and he knows you know, how I look at some of these things. And I'm going to turn it around and ask you a question. If it's 3rd and 8 and T.Y. Hilton catches a 5-yard pass and Logan Ryan tackles him and the punt team comes out and punts, did Logan Ryan do his job?
Yes.
Right. So a lot of these stats, and this is one of the things I hate about overanalyzing this game and relying too much on numbers. As Booger McFarland said, they're a lot like bikinis. They show a lot, but not everything. And I don't really go by a lot of these numbers and verify them to use them to verify what I'm seeing in front of me. So I'll say this. Logan Ryan has some areas for improvement. We all know that he struggled to run vertical routes with receivers, whether it was on the outside or the inside. That's something that they just clearly needed. They wanted to get better at. And I really feel that that's why they went out and they grabbed a guy like Christian Fulton. So I'll say there was more to be desired out of Logan Ryan, but I could justify bringing him back because I feel like he was a guy that had a pretty strong presence in the locker room, a strong presence within that DB group. And I know firsthand from watching him throughout the week when Tremaine Brock first came here, he was the guy that Tremaine Brock was attached to learn the defense. So I feel like there is a strong role, a strong need for a guy like Logan Ryan. Now, fortunately, they were able to go out and get a Johnson Joseph, who I think his impact is going to be more than just what we're looking at on the surface because of what he's able to do as a locker room mentor and a guy that could really help someone like Christian Fulton and even a not a young guy, but an up-and-coming guy in Adoree Jackson. So long story short, I get it. Pro Football Focus has numbers and things like that, but, you know, you got to go beyond that.
Teron's hotspot. Pro Football Focus. Got it. Okay.
That's
putting in the notes. Next time we want to get Teron fired up, I love it. We'll bring up PFF.
Hey, TD's always fired up. That's what I love about him. Teron Davenport here with us from ESPN covers the Titans for them, talking with TD. I enjoyed the piece that you did last week, I guess it was, on Steve Underwood and his mustache. That was fantastic. Because, as you pointed out, I mean, that's kind of what he's being remembered the most for is his very distinct-looking mustache. But what have you been able to find out about his replacement, Burke Nihil? Because I don't know anything about him at all, but I'm just wondering what you have been able to find out.
Well, obviously, he is someone who came in primarily on the legal side of things. But just in being in the building – and talking to him and seeing him walk by, I love his energy. He's very upbeat. He always is positive, you know, and he's a guy that he'll ask me, he'll say, what do you think our chances look like this week? And if I'm like, hey, look, I think you guys can win, but yeah, that's what I'm talking about, and keep going. So I like that about him, you know, the positivity that he has. But then I thought it was pretty cool, and I think I forget where I read it, but he was talking about the need to connect everything as far as be aware of what's going on the field and connecting that to the front office. So I thought that was a really good point that he made. So I think it's great for the team. It's all in the positive direction. And if I was a Titans fan at this point right now, I would trust Miss Amy Adams-Strunk. I think she has done an excellent job of all across the board, allowing people to do their thing, overseeing it, putting her input in when need be. So I think it's a good situation.
Well, I I'm not speaking for my co-hosts here, but I know with the conversations we've had on this show, at least for me, I mean, you've already, with what you just said, have given me a lot of hope and a lot of excitement that, I mean, you've had conversations with him, that he knows who you are and he's paying attention. Now, I'm not saying that a president has to be just out in front of everybody and has to be that visible. But I do believe that you have to have some public role and people have to know you for more than I know you were joking, but know you for more than just a mustache. So I think that that's a positive thing with Burke. And I'm curious of in your other stops of covering the Eagles or covering the Ravens of some of those front office people outside of the GM, just how visible they truly were, whether it was an owner or a team president.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say this. John Robinson is my favorite GM that I've gotten to work with. He's the most accessible one. But when you look at some of the other organizations, I think, you know, their people, especially in Philly and Baltimore, both of them, they were always in the building. You saw them out and about. They were pretty aware of things that we as the media wrote, that they followed our work. So I don't think that that's that much different. But I think just the interaction between front office types and the media is ramped up a bit here in Nashville. And maybe that's because this is a smaller market than Baltimore and Philly. But even in my times in San Francisco, you know, it was like that too. So it's, I would say that they're more interactive though.
Going back to the football side of things and listening to you talk about the defense and, you know, Logan Ryan not being here, how much do you really anticipate the defense to change now that it's gone from Dean Pease to Mike Vrabel, and Mike Vrabel having a little more, and he's had say, he's the head coach, but now he's putting his hands even more so on the defense. How much of a change do you anticipate?
I don't really anticipate much of a change, honestly, because although that was Dean Pease calling the defense, rest assured, Mike Vrabel had a lot of input with it. So I don't think it'll be that much different. I think one of the things that you will see, and one of my guests, Gene Clemens from Football Game Plan, made an excellent point on this, is you may not see that one dominant pass rusher, but you're probably going to see a series of four or five guys with anywhere from 6 to 10 sacks, which is, hey, that's a pretty good situation. So I think that's how that whole situation will work out. But it'll be very similar, in my opinion. I'm just curious whether or not, because of the loss of Logan Ryan, whether or not they will blitz as much from that nickel spot. That's something Logan Ryan did exceptionally well. Dean Pease used to rave about it.
Good stuff as always. Who's going to be on Talking with TD this week?
Yeah, this week we have Eric Crocker, a former Jet cornerback. He has done some outstanding film work in regards to Christian Fulton. So we're going to have him on to talk a little shop about Christian Fulton. I'm working on a couple other things. May have something for you. But, you know, other than that, we're just going to talk shop, man.
I like it. All right. Good stuff as always. Appreciate the visit.
Yes, sir. Appreciate you guys.
Teron Davenport, Talking with TD, is the podcast every week. He gets great guests, great analyst of a lot of things, and you need to check it out for sure. And he joins us typically every Monday on the program. Of course, he is also covers the Titans, NFL Nation reporter for ESPN and ESPN.com. We will come back. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase here on this Monday, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Tune in this Friday. That's May 22nd. At noon, well, we actually want you to tune in at 10. But at noon, we're going to play Game 6 Remastered. That'll chronicle the Predators' historic 2017 Western Conference title and, of course, their elimination of the Anaheim Ducks. You can hear Pete Weber's call of the biggest moments of Game 6 plus exclusive insight into the Predators' memorable playoff run from the individuals that lived it. That is, once again, Game 6 Remastered this Friday. We will be playing it live from noon until 2 o'clock during our show right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, also on the Game Nashville app. Looking forward to that. Got a sneak peek of a segment yesterday, and let me just say this. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and if that's what 2 hours is going to sound like, this is going to be must listen to radio starting at noon on Friday. Can't wait.
Yeah, I could not agree with you more. I listened to the same segment, and it's awesome. And I've been helping do some of the video part of it and put all that together, and it's a very cool concept that Ryan came up with, and excited to hear it all on Friday.
No doubt about it. Speaking on that front, there is some news on the hockey front. So let's talk about that. Let's get everybody caught up to speed. I guess today they're expected to have another or maybe it's just their weekly meeting. I don't know if it's something that's added or if it's just another weekly meeting. Board of Governors today at 2 o'clock. I know that there's been a lot of reporting out there on exactly, you know, what could be the neutral sites, what it's going to look like. I know Scott Burnside did some stuff on The Athletic. I've seen where Bob McKenzie has been reporting stuff. So what do you guys make of maybe the neutral sites or site? Where would that be? And also the format coming back.
Well, there's been a lot of speculation on what progress the talks have made over the last week or so. And as you mentioned, Darren, the Board of Governors meets every Monday at 2 o'clock Nashville time. So right when our show ends, they'll be meeting. Now, what happens is until they're really ready to take a vote and they feel like behind the scenes they've made enough progress, they usually don't vote unless they're pretty sure they have the consensus that they need to move forward. And if they're not ready, more talks will happen. But according to Pierre LeBrun and others, Darren Drager, Bob McKenzie, as you referenced, Scott Burnside has a lot of detail on some of the stuff that Pierre LeBrun, his colleague from The Athletic, had, that it seems like there's momentum for the 24 teams that we talked about, which would include the Blackhawks and the Canadians, two sellers at the deadline that are out of it that wouldn't otherwise be in it. And there is some pushback for that. But 24 teams, if you take a look, and Scott Burnside, I would encourage you to look at The Athletic and how the format would work. Because one of the things that we kind of kicked around last week, guys, that looks like it would be part of the equation is you wouldn't just dive in there and start playing games that mean a ton. You would take the 24 teams and you would play a round robin of five or six games, which would count, and they would also maybe have a chance to change the seeds. Everybody would ultimately be in the tournament, but you could improve your seed or actually lower your seed if you didn't play well in these five or six games as a lead up. And then you would everybody would feel like at least they've got some games under their belt before you're playing for real for keeps for the playoffs. It's pretty intriguing, I think. And so what would happen is each team would have each hub would have six teams. And I think you would play those other teams, the other five teams in a five game round robin, and then you would start the playoffs depending on where you're matched up. And then they're kicking around where those games would take place. I've seen reports that there would be four cities that would be hubs, and I've seen some that would be two cities with their hubs. Vegas is in there a lot. I
kind of
Minneapolis.
Feel, I agree. I kind of feel like Las Vegas is definitely going to be one of the hubs.
That would make the most sense.
Minnesota is the other one that I'm hearing a lot.
So the Predators would probably go there?
I think that... That looks like the strongest possibility based on what's being reported, because the Central Division, you know, that's where the Wild are located. And so in theory, if that division went to one spot, you would figure it would be in St. Paul, and you could use other arenas in the area. And they have the college facilities. They have the combination of all the things that you're looking for to be able to logistically pull it off.
Well, I do like the round-robin idea.
Well, I was going to say, it does seem like what I've been saying all along. I don't know why we keep talking about a regular season. It does seem like that is faded out of the picture, right? Like the notion of trying to come back and finish up the regular season doesn't seem to be in the cards. Is that fair to say?
Oh, that I think that's for sure the direction it's going. 31 teams are not coming back. I think it's either 20 or 24 at this point.
But they haven't said that officially.
It depends on how loud
though,
right? The protest. It depends on how loud the protest is from the people that are saying, you know, it's clear why you're putting in the Blackhawks and the Canadians. They don't really deserve to be in this. You're putting them in just for money purposes for you know their viewing audiences, which makes sense financially, right? You want those fan bases from those two markets engaged in this. That makes a lot of sense, mm-hmm. right? But from a pure competition standpoint, they probably don't deserve to be in there. The other thing that you did, though, is, as you said, Darren, this is a point you made when we debated this. If you go down to 20 even though that's probably more realistic, you would, in that scenario, lop off Arizona, who is not as far out. You know, it still had a reasonable shot to jump in and grab at least one of the wild cards in the mix here, or maybe even grab third place in the Pacific. But under the 20-team standings, they would be the odd team out that really on paper still had a shot.
I think that is the problem. I was in favor of – I'm more in favor of the 20-team, but I told you when we were having the discussion about the 24, I think – the biggest problem you're going to have is it's easy to chop off Chicago and Montreal. The third team, you could say still kind of easy. It's the fourth team, and that's where I think you're going to get some real pushback. And to me, the pushback is going to be too great, and you just have to say, well, we'll just deal with the other pushback of, why did you let Chicago and Montreal in? That pushback is probably lesser than the pushback of telling, like you said, a team like Arizona, thanks, but you're out. We've made the decision. You're out.
So would you guys vote for 24? If the vote were today and you have a say, would you vote for 24 over 20?
If I was actually in the room and I actually had say and understand the lay of the land of then trying to pick the four teams that were out, if we picked 20, I'd probably just go on and take the safer route and just do 24. There'll be less blowback.
Yeah, I'd go 24.
I think I would too. And knowing that this is a very unique set of circumstances and it's not going to be something that's going to, you know, hopefully never come into play again. It's a one-year deal. Now, because the biggest thing that the pushback is we know why you're doing this. A, you're getting those markets involved, which has its benefits. But if Carey Price has two great games, and let's be honest, he could, and they knock out the Maple Leafs or, you know, somebody who legitimately was in the running, and they're going to be eliminated from this thing by a team that was not going to make the playoffs, then that's not the greatest thing in the world. But that's competition, right? That's how you're laying it out, because it would look like a 2 out of 3 in that initial round, and in theory, the Predators would be in that somewhere as well. You know, they could be matched up with Minnesota in the first round at a 2 out of 3, or maybe even the Blackhawks, maybe another team in there. But, you know, that's what we'll have to wait and see. But it does look like there's a lot of – the biggest thing of the story that I think is important, you know, especially in light of NASCAR coming back, is that there is momentum to play. Mm-hmm. Right? The vibe is they're moving towards it. That's what I was saying. When we talked to John Hines last week, I think he was catching wind of this. I think there's been momentum, that there is a willingness and a want, and I think the belief that they can pull this off health-wise and all that. That's encouraging.
Well, if all sports are doing that and all states are going the right, you know, going the direction that we want, they're opening up and things seem to be going that direction and sports coming back, I mean, why would we not think that? You know, it's not it's not like,
for example,
we're going it's not like we're still back in phase zero, right? Like nothing's happening. We're all at home. Nothing is coming back. There's no sports back. If that was the case, then we would be having a totally different conversation. But instead, we're talking about things coming back, things opening up around the country. And so it's just all going that direction. So I guess we shouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, and you can't be the one league that, you know, doesn't have somewhat of a plan with everything getting out and people knowing that, okay, baseball's got something in motion and they got a lot to figure out. You know, it would appear the NBA, same thing, and now the NHL, MLS. So you kind of have to stay with what's going on and have some sort of a plan. So we'll see. The 24 team is not perfect, but if that's what it's going to be, then fine. I do love the round robin idea to get everybody warmed up and have those games count with seeding. So I think if that turns out to be the plan and that's how the NHL comes back, whether it's in July or whenever, then I'm okay with it. That's nothing's going to be perfect at this point. At least they got something in motion.
That's here's a detail, guys, that is worth noting. That if it's 24 teams, you have 7 teams in the Central that are involved and only 5 in the Pacific, right, with the cutoff being the Blackhawks. So that means that the Wild in this deal that Burnside puts out there, the Wild become the sixth team in the Pacific, and the six other teams from the Central remain in one bracket. At least for, I don't know how they would do it for the actual playoffs when they start, but for the round robin in your pod, and that would open up some questions, I guess, is, you know, if you're playing in Minnesota, do the Wild need to be in Minnesota? Shouldn't they be in Minnesota? Or are you sending the other teams?
Is it like, everybody else has got to be neutral? Then why would? Well, I guess it doesn't matter, right? I guess it neutral. We're talking about no fans, correct?
Yeah, no fans. But you know, for logistic purposes, why would you have a team travel?
Right.
You know, time zone away when they're playing and right in their backyard. But Vegas and Minnesota in this would be in the same division, the Pacific Division. So that would lead to questions of, okay, so where are they playing? Are they playing in Vegas, or are they playing in Minnesota, or what? I'm not exactly sure how that would work.
Do we think that this – go ahead, Darren, and then I'll get my thought.
No, just if you're going to talk about this, go ahead.
Well, I the only thing I was going to say is, do we think that – let's say if the NBA has their plan done before – camps open for the NHL, and the NBA is saying, hey, we're going to kind of follow suit with baseball or with NASCAR and just have everybody kind of play at their own arena as long as that state's government is cool with it. Could we see the NHL shifting to that model? So if Nashville is in phase three or whatever at this point, that they're just playing at Bridgestone. I know you're adding travel at that point, but could we see something similar to that?
I guess that, what I don't understand, do the Timberwolves and the Wild share the same arena?
No.
No.
Okay.
But in theory, they could use both of those arenas to have more than one setting.
How could they do that?
Games.
Well, the Target Center is in Minneapolis, yeah. And that's where the Timberwolves play.
Right, but I mean, how could you use to if the NBA comes back, how would you do that? I mean,
well, we don't know when the NBA is coming back.
Well, I think it's just like, well, we're talking about the NHL. I think all signs are pointing toward they're all coming back. I mean, the NBA is coming back. So I don't know what that means for that
arena.
But
hasn't the NBA talked about playing in Vegas or playing – I don't know if they – now, here's one piece of info that I thought was newsworthy today is Governor Cuomo in New York. And of course, New York has been the hardest hit, right? So they would be the ones where – you know, and they have so many pro franchises in all these leagues, multiple franchises in all the leagues. He said today that, you know, he wants to help. He's open-minded. He's to the point now where he can see, you know, he wants to be a facilitator of allowing the teams to play with no fans, right? And really, baseball is the one that is probably most important. All those teams in that area, and in theory, baseball wants to play in their own parks, right? They're not going to a pod system there. So I wonder if that would affect, because Toronto's the other big one in the grand scheme of things as well. They've got this lockdown that's going well into June, what did Elliot tell us last week? Late June, June 30th or something, before you can have any real public events there. So that, I think.
Right.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see how they come up with NHL. The sites, you know, how they actually do this, because I think Vegas makes a ton of sense. I understand Minnesota, the four hubs. I'll be interested to see how these leagues handle baseball, the NBA, and hockey, like how they're going to set it up, right? Mm-hmm. I think they're all coming back, but what's the setup going to be? How are they going to do this?
And
that's what I'll be intrigued.
Would you rather them all get on the same page and do a similar thing? So if, like, for instance, if the NHL is like, we would prefer to do the hub, have hubs, and the NBA says, yeah, you know what, that's a good idea, we're going to do the same thing. Does that matter if they all are doing it the same way, or if baseball is determined, nope, we're just going to play in our home stadiums? And clearly it's different for baseball because it's outside, so I think that does make a difference. But I'm wondering if they're all talking and they eventually all get on the same page and do it the same way.
Well, let me ask you guys this, since we're talking about just a playoff series, okay? why would we be talking about neutral site? Why wouldn't we just they all travel privately. They're all going to be basically quarantined together. Why wouldn't you – what is – why do you have to have hubs? You're playing in front of no one no matter where you go. Is it just to lessen travel? What is
– Yes.
So it's just strictly to lessen travel?
Yeah.
I think so.
But
I
guess,
I mean, what else – you see what I mean? Like, what else are you – what else are you accomplishing? I mean, you're going to – the setup is going to be the same whether you did it at home or something. Is it simply because not all the states are in the right phases? Is that what it is? I don't know. I mean, I'm assuming they're going on the premise that everybody will be in the same – but I guess maybe not. I don't know. Maybe you can't go on that premise. I was just reading
Well, they haven't gotten into specifics on – they haven't gotten into the specifics of whether the players and the team travel group would be confined and in a bubble per se. You know, would you be able to go home at any point?
Right.
I mean,
right.
Are
you allowed to go
a
home?
Little more to the point where, like, okay, maybe you could go home if you took the right measures and stuff. I don't know where they are in that. I have not seen any details on that from the beginning when they were saying you would go into a bubble for however many months.
And that's the
real question.
The players
have definitely pushed back on that, right? You've seen a lot of players. The players have all come out and said, I'm not thrilled about that idea.
Right, but that's,
you know,
making my point.
From my
that's
family.
Even more.
My
if they're allowed
pregnant,
to go home, if they're allowed to go home, then why wouldn't you just go on and just do what you normally do in a playoff series, right? I mean, that's kind of the way – that's what I need to know. Are they allowed to go home at any point? Or is it truly what we were talking about back at the beginning where you're like in an Olympic Village and you're set up camp there, and once you leave home, that's it until you're done, right, until you then come home for good. If that's the case, okay, then I understand. But if you are going to allow them at some point to go home, then what's the point of having the neutral sites, or what's the point of having the four hubs? I mean, why don't you just do
the series the way you do them? You could play the initial games. I think one of the things, Darren, logistically, is if you wanted to have a round robin, right? Let's just say it's Minnesota, and you had six teams from the Central in Minnesota, and you played a round robin. You could play those games in a relatively short period of time over a week or 10 days, and now you've got your team camped together. Now you're ready, and maybe the playoffs then would be in your home sites. I don't know, but you could knock out a lot of games quick with a lot of teams there.
That's fine.
Because
if you're going
to
do
all
that
the time
setup,
in the world, right? You're
okay,
trying to get this into a two or three month window.
Right. If you're talking about playing a couple of are they exhibition? What are they? Are they exhibition? What are they? Tune up games.
No, they're games that count. They're games that count. They count because it could change the seeds.
They're games that count that could change the seeds. So then you are talking about playing some regular season games.
But it's a round robin type tournament, like a qualifier, is essentially what it would be. So yes, it's. I guess you can view it as the regular season, but how I understand it, it's like the Olympics or the World Cup. Something like that,
right?
That you could do it that way.
So you're talking about round robin with the 24 teams or 20, whatever they come up with.
Yes. You wouldn't have any of the others. It would be just those teams that are in the tournament, so to speak. And Jeff, who's a loyal listener from Minnesota, texted in and said that Minneapolis, St. Paul, pretty much all of the high schools have rinks that you could practice at. The Target Center, XL Energy Center, you know, those are rinks. There's Bloomington that has one, and St. Cloud that's 50 miles away. So there's a ton of ice space in Minnesota that you would be able to house a lot of teams and give them practice space and plus play some games. So, and I get all that, but I'm with you that once you get into the playoff series, then just use the home rinks.
Well, if they're allowed to go home. I mean, that's right. Kind of where I was going with all this. Tell me, are they allowed to go home, or is this a deal where you kiss the wife and the family goodbye and you leave and say, I'll see you when we're eliminated, or, you know, whenever it ends? or are they going to at some point allow them to go back and spend some, you know, they have a couple off days, are allowed to go back home for a day and be with the family? If so, then to me it makes no sense to have these hubs. I mean, just do your series the way you do it, right? Just have series like a normal setup. That's the way I see it, but
yeah,
I don't know.
I guess the only thing that would deter them from doing that is if you do have areas that their government saying no go, we can't allow that to happen, then you're trying to make it as fair as possible that, okay, so you have, I'm just going to use this as an example. If the United Center is clear and they can use it, but Bridgestone Arena is not, then the NHL could view it as, okay, that's unfair to Nashville that they can't use their rink. Chicago can. So let's just use these hubs, and then it's fair for everybody. I guess is the reasoning behind it.
Okay. I mean, we won't know the answer of a couple of months from now, or I don't know, at least a month from now. I noticed with the NFL facility starting to reopen that I was reading some stuff out there that I guess there's about 10, I think it was 10 teams because of their markets. They still have, you know, they're not allowed to reopen. So 10 of the 32 franchises still.
Is Nashville one of those? Or are they allowed to reopen?
I don't know. I haven't seen the list. What I read said there was approximately 10 or so teams that because of their current setup, their laws, stay at home, what have you, that they were unable to go to the facilities. Because some are starting tomorrow. Some of the facilities are open up tomorrow, and a lot of teams could report depending on their setup. So I don't know. We're talking about in the now.
This is all down the road. To move forward here.
Right. So you don't know. You don't have those.
Yeah, you would have at least three weeks of training.
At least 3 weeks? Well, then you're going to have to get going here soon.
There seems to be near universal agreement that along with an extended period of on-ice training, some are predicting up to 3 weeks, it's impractical to simply begin with play-in elimination games. Then the five-game round-robin style tournament, basically for seeding, would take place in 8 or 9 days in these hubs, basically. And so you have a little bit of time here. I think you take the month of June, a good part of that, as the training session, and then you hope to be full-blown into it, into this tournament by July, so that you could finish up in time to start next season. I think that's the hope, the roadmap that they would hope to stick by. And, let's keep our fingers crossed that nothing has to shut things down.
Well, that's what I'm saying. We're going to have to get some news here very, very soon. There's less than 2 weeks left in the month.
It's almost June.
Like, we're almost to June. So if you're talking about having this three-week window in June, well, we're less than 2 weeks away from June. So at some point, we're going to have to get some news if that's realistic of happening. Although maybe they're talking about the very end of
that's
June.
That's why all these articles are coming out, because the talks have ramped up, right? They're trying to do their best not to spill the beans on this stuff, but you got a lot of people who are really good reporters that are getting some info from how the talks are going. And so it does give you reason to believe that they're getting closer to unveiling things. That's the speculation that LeBron and McKenzie and a lot of the top guys, Elliott, all saying that there's momentum for the 24, and you might hear more in the coming weeks. I mean, they're gonna announce it as soon as they can, but I still think they have another week or so to play with. I mean, the sooner the better, though.
Are we still in the mindset with all this being thrown out there? And I realize nothing, just whatever's been speculated and tossed out there, that this is going to be a deal where the next season doesn't start until December? Is that where all signs are still pointing towards?
I'm not sure on that.
We're not talking about a starting in training camp in September and an October regular season, are we?
Definitely not. No, yeah. You would push it back some. I think December? Early December would be they feel like they could do it then. So I don't know. That'll be something to look at. But I think it's safe to say that you would not have your normal timetable. It just depends on how quick you could get through a 24-team process here and crown the champion. I don't know what the date of the final game would be. If it's August, then yeah, I think you're looking at a what?
Oh, there's
no chance.
You take
off September, you take off October.
No chance of 2014.
Maybe you start training camp in November and start the season in December.
Yeah. You need close to 2.5 months to finish off a 24-teamer, right? 2.5 months?
Probably.
Is that a fair – that's a good window, right? Well, I mean, mm-hmm. it would have to
– I think so.
So, I mean, we're not talking about anything getting wrapped up in August. So, yeah, I think it would definitely – we'd be talking about something starting up probably in December. That would make sense. All right, we will come back and hear some of game night that Chase conducted Friday night with Hall of Famer Tom Glavine. We will do that to kick off the final hour of Darren Donick and Chase on this Monday, ESPN 102.5 The Game.